Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is Gabrielle Denman. I will be the interviewer. Mary Harrison will be the recorder. We are interviewing Dr. Alan Kent. Today is May 28, 1993. Dr. Kent, we forgot to ask you the date of your birth. Would you please tell it to us?
October 24, 1921.
Okay. The other thing we forgot to ask you, Dr. Kent, were the names of your parents.
Father Samuel Kaslowski.
Please spell it.
K-A-S-L-O-F-S-K-Y.
Okay.
Mother Anna.
Anna,
sorry. Maiden name Begun.
B-E-G-U-N. Okay, good. Thank you.
Last name?
B-E-G-U-N.
Oh, I thought that was her middle name. I'm sorry.
That's her middle name.
That was her maiden name. Yeah.
That's her maiden name.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
She was good. Married.
So when did they change it to Kent?
We did it. Do you want that story
Yeah,
now?
Sure.
Okay. I left the Army, got back in November of 1945, one of the early ones, and decided that I didn't want to continue working as a chemist, which was my training, and decided to look for a position where my chemistry would be useful, but work in personnel or some other administrative type of position. So, wrote letters to the presidents of a lot of companies in the New York area. Got a response from almost every one of them, and interviews with most of them. It was a good letter. And it was the time when servicemen were returning, and they were treated as well. So anyway, one of them was the president of American Agricultural Chemicals in New York City, and he invited me to lunch at White's Restaurant in New York. And if you've never been there, this is hoo-ha. I still don't go to restaurants. You know, it's more fancy than the Colony and any other restaurant you have been in Pittsburgh. I mean, it's for the super, super, super wealthy. Okay, so we sit down for lunch, and we start discussing the menu. So I looked at the menu. As of that time, I've been to a restaurant only a few times, couldn't afford it, and I saw shad roe. So that looked interesting. I didn't know what the hell it was. So I ordered shad roe. Oh, he said, very discriminating taste. So I said, yeah, I forgot what I said. Anyway, what kind of sauce would you like on it? Well, I didn't know. So I said, nothing, I like it plain. Well, have you ever tasted shad roe in a cake without sauce on it, and you're chewing these little eggs, and you almost choke on it without a sauce? Well, I struggled through that one. Anyway, we finished the lunch, and then we started discussing what might be an appropriate position. He was interested in me. He said, but you know, I've got a problem with your name. You wouldn't fit in to any of our corporate offices. We have a place in northern New Jersey where there are a lot of Polish names that end in ski. And I'd like to meet our personnel director. Well, I did afterwards, and I decided I'm not going to take this anymore. Came home, talked to Roz, and discussed that this wasn't the first time we'd encountered, you know, anti-Semitic type things. You know, not tremendous, but this one was the beginning of a career after the Army, and I didn't want to be have that problem. So we discussed it thoroughly and decided to change our name. And this was in early 1946, and I have no idea whether my career would have developed the way it did with my original name or with this name. But life was a lot easier, and that's it.
Do you know if this White's Restaurant still exists?
I'm sorry?
Is this White's Restaurant still in existence? I'd never heard of it.
It's way downtown.
Yeah.
and I don't know if it's still in existence, but...
But it was the place to go.
Oh, boy.
Okay. That's kind of fun. Now, again, before we get...
Isn't it funny that I'd remember that name for so long?
Did you just remember the name of the company?
American Agricultural Chemicals.
You had mentioned on tape one about your summers when you were little, when you went to the Catskills.
Yeah.
And your father came on weekends.
Yeah.
How long did that last, and what did you do in summers as an adolescent?
Well, the that lasted only a few years that I recollect. And as an adolescent, I used to be in the streets of the Bronx.
Playing or working?
Playing.
Okay. Did you ever have summer jobs?
Yes. This is when I started going to college. I had summer jobs. And also during the Passover holidays, the 10-day period, or the 8-day period, they used to have resorts in the outlying areas of New York City, and they needed waiters and busboys. Now, I wasn't skilled enough to be a waiter, but I was a busboy. And I remember at one of these places, I started serving someone who was a classmate of mine, and it was the funniest feeling to serve them. They were obviously very well off. Anyway, they fired me from that job because the food they gave the help was just a different grade, and it smelled bad and all that. So I remember I used to order a breakfast for room service and take it down the hall this way. The busboys were supposed to do room service, and just eat it on the way. And they caught me, and they sent me home.
Oh, my word. Do you remember the name of the hotel?
No, I don't remember that.
Were these in the Catskills?
No, that was the Catskills.
These
were some types of resort things in Long Island or places like that,
mm-hmm.
where the wealthy used to go
For
Passover.
For the whole week?
Yeah.
Okay, they still have those kind of places, I think. Okay, so...
Then I got into the big leagues in the Catskills, and I went up as a the word escapes me, a bellboy. And I could still carry 4 suitcases, 2 under my arms and 2 this way. And I was at the Grand Hotel. This was an old line Catskill hotel, and it had an elevator that you had to start by pulling a rope, and then the elevator would start up. I remember that. And I was there for 1 summer.
Do you remember what year? You were still in high school, or were you already in college?
I was in college. I was probably 17, maybe.
Okay. What language did you speak at home when you were
growing? I spoke English.
Yeah.
My parents spoke Yiddish. We understood one another. So I was, I still understand Yiddish, but I really can't speak it.
Okay. Now we're ready to continue where we left off. I assume when you were in the pinball machine business, you were already in college.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, I was.
Okay. Now the one thing we have to clarify is the... how much money did you make totally from your 5 pinball machines, and how much did you give to the candy store owner, and how much did you get to take home?
Well, first of all, the easy part was how much you give to the candy store. Whatever was in the machine, in the back of the machine, we used to split 50-50.
I see.
Okay, I kept half, he kept half. The totals of how much I made, it really escapes me. I was considered well off among my friends in being able to, get gas for a car and take Roz out on dates and all of that. But It could have been.
Well, it must have varied, obviously.
It varied, but, you know, it could have been $30 a week, you know, which was a hell of a lot of money at that time. And I also held a job then, they called it the National Youth Administration, the NYA, where students could work 10 hours a week for $15 a month. And I had two assignments over the years that I had that. One was working for a German professor, since I, as a budded chemist, had to know German. Took German year after year to translate one of the books that he would edit from German to English. And the next job was in Flushing Hospital, New York, as an apprentice pharmacist. And the pharmacist was an old guy, Pop Guest, he was called, G-U-E-S-T. And he used to send me out, he said, we've run out of Spiritus Frumenti. And he said, make sure it's Four Roses. And he used to keep his Spiritus Frumenti off the shelf and used to take his nip every couple of hours.
Now, was that a program under Roosevelt? It has an acronym. You mentioned
the National Youth Administration.
Okay, was that part of the New Deal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now we.
And by the way, they knocked me off. Oh, I also worked at a library for that, doing shelf reading.
Shelf reading.
You know what shelf reading is?
No, tell us.
If you face a shelf of books, and they're arranged in a certain way, if it's fiction, you know how that's arranged. If it's nonfiction, it's by call number, and you've got to read the shelves to make sure every book is in its proper place. It is deadly. It's deadly. And I used to fall asleep doing it, shuffle along. And I remember this old maid male librarian at City College who used to creep up behind me, tap me on the shoulder, and I would jump. Well, that lasted for one term. And finally, they fired me from all NYA. They took me off NYA because someone snitched on me because they saw me driving a car. And you were supposed to, you know, have no resources.
Oh, I see. Okay, let's get back to your beginning of college.
Yeah.
What year did you enter college?
I entered in February 1938.
Okay, we can figure out how old you were. And you went to CCNY. And I assume there was just one campus.
Yeah.
Where was it?
145th Street and Amsterdam Avenue.
Okay. And have you any idea what the enrollment was?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I have no idea.
What were the prerequisites to get in?
Well, grades. I don't recall any exams, just grades.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was competitive.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Okay. And you did mention it was free.
Yeah.
But you did mention that you had to buy books.
That's right.
But obviously from all these jobs you had, you could buy books. Had you met...
Used books.
Where did you buy those books?
They used to be used bookstores as there are at campus.
Okay. Had you met Roz by then?
I met her when I was 19 and a half.
So you were in college?
I was like, oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where did you meet her?
A couple of buddies of mine and I were, one Sunday, heard there was a neat Jewish center out of our territory. So it was about a 10-block walk. Excuse me. And we heard there was some neat chicks there. So we went to look over them. And Roz was there. It was a dance, and I took Roz home, and that was the beginning. We never stopped going with one another from that moment on.
What was her name?
Rosalind Kosoff, K-O-S-S-O-F-F.
Okay. So you would...
K-O-S-S-O-F-F.
Thank you.
Okay, now before we get into your courtship and marriage, I want to talk a little bit about your early years at CCNY. Did you know when you entered what you would study, a major?
Well, the question I had was, well, I knew it had to be one of the sciences because the social sciences didn't interest me at all. Math was my love, but you can't get a job as a mathematician, I was told by family, friends. The only thing left, and physics, my gosh, you can't get a job at that. And the only thing left was chemistry. And I didn't realize there was a lot of anti-Semitism in the chemical industry, too. But that was by default, I took that.
And you started that major right away?
Well, I forget what term it's going. You have to take one of your sciences without necessarily declaring a major right away, but I remember starting it. I didn't like it, but I knew I had to. That was going to be my major. Math, 2 years of calculus, it was a absolute duck soup. And I remember the professor whom I found out later was a very famous guy, William Robinson, who talked to me afterwards, said, "You've got to major in math if I want you in my program." And I said, "No, you know, because it was, you can't get a job." And that was the reason you go to college, get a job, very soon. So.
What are your memories of college, other than chemistry?
City College had the poor man's version of fraternity. The different houses, Remsen House, this house. I belonged to Remsen House. And this was an old, like many of the frat houses, an old house where no living accommodations, but a place where you could gather and have coke and things of that sort. So I used to go there occasionally. And occasionally there'd be a dance. And then during breaks in class, they had very heavy oak tables that we used for ping pong. We used to set up a net and play ping pong. And as you may have heard, City College students are some of the best ping pong players there are. And that's where they learned.
Were mostly first generation Americans there?
Yeah.
How about the faculty?
You know, there were very few faculty I remember.
Really?
It was, I don't know why, but, well, I remember a physician who taught physics, and I guess he was making enough money as a physician. And I remember Dr. Layton, his name was. Layton, L-E-Y-T-O-N. Him I remember. A coarse individual came in late once, and he made a coarse comment about why he was late. He had to take care of a patient with hemorrhoids. And the way he described that, I can't do it.
Well, what was he teaching? If he was physics.
Yeah.
But he was a physician.
Yeah.
That's strange.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Was the faculty unionized at that time?
Oh, gosh, no.
Did they have tenure?
I assume so, although it never occurred to think about. I didn't know about tenure at that time. I learned about it.
What year did you graduate?
February of 1942,
okay.
Although I finished all my requirements almost a year earlier, taking extra courses and all that. I graduated February 1942, when I finished most of my requirements almost a year prior to that by taking extra courses, but leaving one required course for the last term so they couldn't graduate me so I could get as much as possible, which was, of course, meteorology.
So, and that was required?
Well, there was a course in the distribution. I left out that.
I see.
It wasn't meteorology. I could have taken one or several. So I left that open. And, by the way, that was the end of my formal education. You know, I've gotten so accustomed to being called Dr. Ted that I don't know how to stop it. There is, you know, there are very few people who have a distinguished service professorship who don't have a master's degree or a PhD. So I'm one of those.
Do you have any? Do you have an honorary?
No.
So we're not to call you Dr. Ken?
No.
I
was waiting for this moment to tell you that.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. That could that happen now? If you were a young person, with your qualifications, with your knowledge.
In my field, never.
Because, in any field?
Well, I imagine that in a field that is absolutely new,
yeah,
that is considered absolutely hot by the institution.
So we don't have to call you doctor.
That's right.
Okay. When you...
And you don't have to call me Bester. You don't have to call me professor. Just call me Alan. Okay,
we'll do that. After you did fulfill your requirements, you graduated, were there any honors?
No, and I had a very good grade. I don't remember whether I had the honors or not. It may have been cum laude or something. I don't remember. I never even went to graduation.
Did you belong to any, besides your Remsen House, did you belong to any other organizations in school? Okay. So you graduated with a degree in chemistry, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and then what happened?
Then I absolutely needed a job, and my first job was with the, remember the war was going on at the time, and I got a job with the War Department as a civilian in New York City as an inspector of ordnance materiel. And I was inspecting shells and mortar shells and gosh knows what. And that went on for a while. And then there was another offer from the Chemical Warfare Service. And that was to inspect flamethrowers. And for that I had to go to Rochester, New York. Roz and I both went there. We were married then. And I had, by then I had enlisted as an aviation cadet, and after a while in Rochester, New York, I got the call that my class was ready and I had to come to go to Nashville, Tennessee for the initial indoctrination into the U.S. Army Air Corps.
Okay, when did you marry Ross?
January 24th, 1943.
And what was she doing as far as education and so forth?
Well, she was majoring in music at Hunter College.
At Hunter?
Hunter, yeah.
Now, that was not part of the city college system.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Was, it was part of the city system.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she was up to a certain point when we got married, and I took her away from everything. And she never finished her degree. She's been going, she's taking courses at OSU in Columbus, where we were, at West Reserve University in Cleveland, where we were, at the University of Pittsburgh, where we've been. And, you know, she's got an accumulation of stuff to get about.
Does she have a degree?
No.
Is she working toward a degree?
No.
Okay.
No.
When... Is it time to talk about children yet, or...?
Whatever you want to.
Did they come while you were in the service, or later? No,
okay.
We'll decide.
There's a story with the first one.
Okay.
I was in the service. Roz was a cab follower for a while I was in the United States. Well, I got to start again. I went to Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay.
The, where they have the classification. They give you exams and all that classification for... pilot, bombardier, and navigator when you're in the Air Corps. And I got state eyes of 999, which meant I could have been any one of them. Those were the top scores of each one of them. So I chose navigator. And just as they were about to get me, start me on basic training for pilots, bombardiers, and navigators, I fell ill. I got pneumonia. I was in the hospital for 3 months in Nashville, Tennessee, with pneumonitis. And at that time, the only thing they didn't have penicillin, so they had the sulfa drugs, sulfatiazine, sulfatiazole, and it was then that I lost my hair. That I found that type of regimen, continuing regimen of those drugs, get rid of hair.
That's
very impressive. Yeah.
Does that happen to everybody? Or?
I don't know. I didn't follow them, but anyway. So once I finished with that, they decided that with that, that I shouldn't be a pilot, bombardier, or navigator anymore. So I left my class, and fortunately, by the way, getting pneumonia saved my life, because my class, there were very few who returned. It was just the time getting ready for the Ploiesti oil field raids in Romania that almost no one returned from those raids, and that was the class that was involved. Anyway, so they started by assigning me to the unit that was doing test development of the test that I took. And I thought that was a curious thing, you know, for a young guy. And by the way, the master sergeant in charge of that unit, of the enlisted men, was Jack Matthews, professor at Pitt, head of the speech and theater arts department. And, well, I just want you to know, also the building that I occupied, the American Institutes for Research, the president was John Flanagan, and he built this whole American Institutes for Research activity here in Washington and other places. When I came to Pitt, I'm jumping ahead now,
yeah, I understand.
Litchfield had a luncheon to welcome me, and he had a lot of, you know, interesting people to come to the luncheon. One of them, sitting right next to me, was John Flanagan, and I'm chatting with him, and I said, you know, I work for you. He looked at me, didn't remember me. He was Colonel Flanagan, head of that unit that I worked for. So
so that was sort of the beginning of your
my real
life's work, so
yeah.
to speak.
Anyway, so I started out doing test development. Then they transferred me to a number of different installations, Amarillo, Texas, where they have units of this, to Greensboro, North Carolina, San Antonio, and Roz would follow me to all of these places. And finally, by the way, I was then finally in Greensboro, North Carolina. I got orders to go overseas. Didn't tell me what the project was. They just called it Project Love. Project Love was sited in London. It was the unit, it was the start of the Air Documents Research Office, which had been set up to take what General Patton found when he went into Peterborough, to the rocket development and testing base in Germany, and got all the documents. They brought them in footlockers to London, and we were now to exploit these for the benefit of U.S. and the Allies. And knowledge of German needed, and one of the sciences, and that's what got me tagged. I was curious when I came out about all these assignments that I had. One of them was to fly around the country recruiting pilots to become flight engineers in preparation for the invasion of Japan, the bombing of Japan, where pilots had to be in the flight engineer's seat and testing them and evaluating them and all that. I checked why, you know, how did I get picked? Well, they finally told me I had had the third highest classification test that they had had to date in the Army, so they figured that they want to save me and use me for special assignments. So that saved me, too.
I should say. Yeah. Now, when you were in Europe, where were you stationed?
In London.
In
I had a flat in London with a couple of other guys, and we worked with the documents until VJ Day, and then they shipped us back to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base with the whole collection that we had. There I was offered a civil service job, and I kept saying, no, 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 and finally they made me the offer, but I couldn't refuse, and that was to get out of the service.
But you stayed at Wright-Patterson?
No, came back to New York.
I see.
Yeah.
Came back where?
To New York City. But yes, this all started with talking about our children.
Yeah.
Did we have any? When I was about to be shipped to overseas, we were in the New York area waiting to board a ship which turned out to be the Queen Elizabeth, and we weren't permitted to leave TAP because we would have to leave at a moment's notice. And Roz was home with the Bronx. We were married. And I went to the Jewish rabbi, the service, the, what do you call him?
Chaplain.
And I said, look, we're newly married. I'm going overseas. I don't know how long I'm going to be there. I don't know if I'm going to have to be in the Army of Occupation once we win and all that, and we don't have any children. I would like to get out and see my wife for that purpose. He looked at me. He hadn't heard that one before. He arranged it for about 12 hours. And our daughter, Beryl, was conceived then and there.
Worked.
Anyway, when she went to the family obstetrician, who'd been in the family for a long time, and he said, you're pregnant. And where's your husband? He's overseas. So she had to explain it. But that's what we had at first time.
And what's her name?
Meryl? Meryl, M-A-R-R-Y-L.
M?
E-R-R-Y-L.